Afternoons with Pepper Hudson.
Pepper Hudson.
And now, Consumer Talk, featuring Wendy Nola.
Well, it's always lovely to have Wendy Nola with us in studio. Thanks for visiting Cape Town this week.
My pleasure, Pepper, and it's raining.
And you brought the rain with you from Durban. Thank you for the depths of our hearts for that as well. Now, today's topic was inspired by a question that came through last week from Nathan. You might recall,
yes.
Nathan asked about questions around corkage fees for his upcoming wedding. And but basically, at the heart of his problem was the fact that he hadn't really read the fine print on their contract with the venue. And seeing as a lot of people do get engaged during the month of December, we thought it was a pertinent time to take the issue a bit further. So this is the theme for the first half hour, not only restricted to weddings, of course. It touches on other functions, Christmas parties, anything like that, birthday celebrations. If you've had issues around deposits and cancellations and your expectations not being met, you're welcome to phone in on those topics in the first half hour. Open line after 1:30 when you can phone on absolutely any consumer issue. The number to dial, 021-446-0567, or you can leave a voice note on WhatsApp, 072-567-1567. It's not the most romantic of topics when you talk about cancelling wedding plans, but it happens quite often, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, no one starts to plan a wedding and thinks about cancellation. Yeah. Most people don't even think about,
paying
a divorce, let alone you know, not having the wedding. So yes, the reality is, though, that around 190,000 couples get married in South Africa every year. And another 10 to 15% of weddings are called off, according to the Consumer Goods and Services Ombud. So a couple of years ago, I had a really good case study involving a very popular wedding venue in the Cape Winelands, which had refused to refund 38,000 rand of a deposit to a couple who had called their wedding off a whole 9 months before the big day. So that's enough time for them to have got another booking.
Not like it was a last minute deal.
Absolutely not. So I got involved, and the general manager was super gracious about it, actually. He said they hadn't had many cancellations and hadn't formulated a proper policy. And he ended up refunding not 50%, which I felt was fair and suggested, but the full amount. So that was a very good resolution. And then when we decided to do this topic, I decided to go back to the venue for an update on, you know, how their policy had changed in the interim and whether they'd had any other cases. Left a message for that general manager to call me, but he hasn't, unfortunately. So I went and did a bit of sleuthing on their website, and this is what I found in their terms and conditions, which took me quite a bit of time to find, incidentally. The deposit is non-refundable unless the date can be resold, in which case a cancellation fee of 25% will apply and the balance will be refunded. Now, that is most definitely not in keeping with the CPA. And I'm not naming them only because I haven't been able to engage and get a response, so in fairness. So that is a big worry. And I'm pretty sure that very few bridal couples would have checked out those T&Cs. And that's part of the problem. Menus and the prices and the wonderful photos of various locations and wedding photos of previous couples having got married in a venue are, you know, very in your face and much, you know, lovely to look at. The boring terms and conditions, not so much. Mm. So it's usually only when a wedding is called off, because one of the couple has had a change of heart, or there's an illness or death in the family, which is quite common, or the family just runs into financial problems. It's then that they discover too late that, there's either a no refunds policy or it's not very
generous.
Not very generous to them.
I mean, it's about fairness on both sides.
Absolutely.
Here, because obviously a venue can't be left holding the baby if a wedding is cancelled last minute and they can't replace that booking.
I think it's fair to say that the consumers themselves, the bridal couple to be, can also be totally unreasonable, and their families, because often the parents get involved. So they would expect, say, a full refund, even though they've cancelled fairly close to the big day, leaving the venue with very little opportunity or chance to rebook it. Mm. And they've also expended time and energy in planning and everything else. So, you know, they've lost a lot, and they don't feel inclined to give back the entire deposit, because that's what the deposit is for.
Oh, yeah.
And it's obviously not just venues, it's caterers, wedding planners, photographers are a big one, decor providers, all that sort of thing. The aim, as you say, Pippa, is to find a fair balance between the competing interests of the venue, or the wedding supplier and the family, the couple doing the booking. So former Consumer Goods and Services Ombud Neville Melville told me a couple of years ago, and I like this very much, the idea should be compensation, not punishment of the couple.
Yeah.
So either party needs to be looked after, and that's why there should be a detailed contract.
Absolutely. What does the Consumer Protection Act say about cancellations on these of this kind?
Okay, so here that's part of the problem. The Act says, in summary, that while consumers have the right to a refund of their deposit, the service provider may charge a reasonable cancellation fee.
Ah, but now, what constitutes reasonable?
Exactly, yeah. It's hugely subjective. I must just say at this point that the CPA does say that there may be no cancellation fee charged whatsoever if a booking is cancelled due to the death or hospitalization of, in its words, the person for whom or for whose benefit the booking, reservation or order was made. So if
the bride ends up in hospital.
It's quite specific. It can't be great Aunt Gertrude. You know, it has to be very material to the booking. Reasonable, as we said, is open to interpretation, and that is why there needs to be a very specific clause around this. So, essentially, the closer to the – it makes sense. The closer to the – if you make a booking today for a wedding in 9 months' time and you cancel in the next week or two, there should be 100% refund because there's been –
there's no demonstrable loss.
Exactly.
Yeah.
However, the closer you get to your date, the more potential loss and the great and the more effort and planning or whatever has gone been put into your event. Mm. And so the refund percentage diminishes down to the last month or 6 weeks, where obviously that would be zero.
Yeah.
So that it needs to be a sliding scale, and it needs to be disclosed and give both parties an opportunity to talk about and understand it. And if that happens, there can or should be very little to no dispute if the horrible happens and there's a cancellation.
I mean, it's common sense if you think about it. The closer you get to the wedding, the more likelihood that the venue itself has had to pay deposits to their providers
party
of flour and you know, for the baking and the flowers for the floral arrangements and all that kind of stuff that they've incurred. It's not fair to expect them to be left holding the can for those bills.
Because on the one hand, the bridal couple thinks, well, we haven't lost art. I mean, we haven't gained anything for our spend. But the wedding, on the other hand, the venue has lost, or the photographer or whatever could have turned away other bookings.
Exactly, and lost potential income.
But now, sorry, one very important thing. The CPA, and I like this, suppliers can be asked to show what their direct losses and costs were. They can't just thumbsuck what their costs were. They need to prove, like, we spent X amount of time with a couple, all that sort of thing. Here's an inquiry, here's an email we got asking to book that particular date, and we turned them down.
Because we
that
already
sort
had
of thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so really important. Keep that paper trail if you're the supplier as well. Now, I love the guest you've lined up for us for an interview is somebody who spotted this problem or found themselves on the wrong end of this problem
and decided
she would take it upon herself to try and educate people about it. Tell us a little bit of the background.
Okay, so Darren Schmidt co-founded a wedding blog company called Hooray Weddings, and they have a lovely little catchphrase. They call themselves bestie to the bride and sister to the service provider. So they sit as a sort of very informal kind of ombudsman where they don't side with one or the other necessarily, but they're providing a service.
Yep.
And she actually heard me talking about this topic on another radio station earlier in the year and realized, they had left themselves open. She herself had downloaded a contract from the internet that was pre-CPA. She didn't realize and left herself open. She can tell the story. She lost out as a direct result. But they very proactively then called in an attorney, a local attorney who specializes in the CPA, got a workshop together, which was well attended. And this attorney advised the kind of things we're just talking about now. You must have a contract, the sliding scale, or all of that. You have to substantiate what your losses are. And now on their site, you can actually, as a service provider, you can download for, I think it's only 150 Rand, a video of that workshop.
That presentation.
And then for about 1,500, you can actually, from this attorney, get a tailor-made contract to suit your business, which I think is just absolutely wonderful. So no excuse then for any service provider. They are KZN-based, but obviously the internet is open to anyone anywhere.
To use,
And yeah.
Let's bring in Darren Schmidt, co-owner of Hooray Weddings, based in Durban. Great to have you with us. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Darren, so tell us your own story. I believe you actually found yourself, as Wendy mentioned, you found yourself on the wrong end of this kind of issue because you had a contract that was not CPA compliant. Tell us what happened and what the consequences were for your business.
Yeah, so both Christy Husking and I are wedding photographers, besides the Hooray business that we run. And last year, I had three cancellations across the year, all for different reasons and within different time periods. But exactly what Wendy was saying, I didn't have a great contract and I did leave myself open. So it was quite a massive loss of money to someone who's just running a small one-man business. It really does affect things quite seriously.
Because I guess if you think about it, if you are, say you're photographing a wedding each weekend over the course of a month, if one person cancels, there's literally a quarter of your monthly income that's wiped out.
Yeah, exactly. And it's physically impossible to shoot every weekend in the year anyway. So it's more like three weddings a month in reality.
Okay. Mm. Now, Darren, so having learned from that experience, you decided that you would take it upon yourself to make other people aware of the fact that, that they needed to be mindful of their terms and conditions. So you organized this workshop that Wendy's described. How well attended was it and who came along?
Oh, it was great. We'd heard Wendy speaking on another radio station, and it sent everyone into such a major panic. So the WhatsApp groups were going crazy. Oh, guys, what do you call your deposit? Is it a booking fee or a non-refundable deposit? And we realized that no one really knew what the correct way to do it was. So, yes, we got in a consumer law specialist, put on a workshop, and we had a great group of people turn out, I think about 50, and it was very last minute because we were all in a bit of a panic. But it was great. Since then, everybody has, most people went online and bought the contract, and we all feel a lot better about things.
Just as an aside, I mean, most people, I would assume, if they didn't have a compliant contract, I would have assumed that that came out of acting out of ignorance rather than people deliberately trying to get away with flouting the law. Is that the sense you had as well?
Yes, I think a lot of people get into the wedding industry quite casually. I think it's something you're good at planning. So you help a friend with a wedding, and before you know it, you've got three of her friends lined up for weddings. And I think what's often the case is that before you know it, you're a professional, but you're not quite set up for it yet. And so it's a case of, oh, gosh, I should probably get some terms and conditions together. Let me ask somebody if I can copy what they've done, which is not the right way to do it. So if you're going to be a professional wedding provider, you need to go in professionally and get set up correctly so that these kinds of things don't happen.
Great advice. Darren, I'd love to share your website with our listeners. If anybody's sitting here listening going, oh my goodness, I'm on the wrong side of this conversation, what's the site where they can take a look and perhaps buy that contract?
It's www.hooraiweddings.com.
Hooray Weddings.
And we've got an online shop, so you just head to the shop and it's there.
Darren Schmidt, thanks for chatting to us, co-owner at HooraiWeddings.com. Wendy, great example of someone recognizing they were in the wrong, proactively, if not only setting themselves right, but helping others to do the same.
And very gratifying for me as well, Pippa, because I must say, before I started, this happened earlier in the year, and until I started researching this show, I didn't realize that had happened as a result of that show. So
fantastic.
Wonderful that she took the initiative and that so many service providers have now, are now protecting themselves and doing things in a way that protects their clients as well. So brilliant.
Did you reach out to any other suppliers?
I did. I was told that South Africa's biggest wedding blog, The Pretty Blog, is based right here in Cape Town, and I had a look on their site and I couldn't find any click-throughs to anything involving contracts and complying with the CPA and all that sort of thing. So I reached out to founder Christine Mankies and asked her the question. She got back to me to say, thanks for the kind offer to be part of your talk show about the wedding industry and the legalities around deposits and booking fees. We currently do not offer any legal advice regarding the wedding industry and working with service providers. I believe it would be best for a lawyer to provide guidance here. And well, of course it would be, and that's what we're talking about. And it would also be really helpful though if a blog devoted to weddings would help its audience find that guidance and for both couples and service providers, because spats about refunds over deposits or anything but pretty.
Absolutely.
And it really, to provide a full service, that needs to be there, because it's, we talked about how many weddings do get cancelled.
And if you think about the additional stress, I mean,
it's
already
a
time that's fraught for whatever reason you've had to cancel it.
Whatever reason. Yeah. And I've spoken to many of them. It's really more common than you realise.
I wonder if anyone listening has found themselves in this position. And if you want to talk to us about how easy or difficult it was for you to unravel the plans you'd put in place and whether you felt you had been well educated about the terms and conditions you'd signed or whether you really struggled with it. If you'd like to reflect your experience, you can send an SMS to 31567 or give us a call on 021-446-0567. Now, while we're talking about functions and events, I had an email in from Lamise earlier this week that sort of links to this topic. And unfortunately, I know she's not alone in being in this predicament because Lamise is one of many Capetonians who were left in the lurch. There was a show on a couple of weeks ago, Wendy, called Enchanted Cirque in a tent at the Cape Town Stadium.
Yeah. Yes.
And the long and the short of it was that the run came to a very abrupt halt. The producer fired the entire staff literally on one night's notice, left the country. As far as we know, the staff haven't yet been paid. They are taking legal action. But of course, he's also left behind a number of pre-booked tickets for shows that aren't going to happen. Yes. And Lamise is one of those affected. She said, "We had booked it for a year in function. So I assume it's a large number of tickets that have been booked. We're desperately trying to get a refund. All it says on their website is that the shows have been cancelled, but there's nothing about getting refunds and nobody is replying to us when we try to contact them. Any suggestions on what to do?"
Very unfortunate situation. And as you said, they've done a runner basically. Mm. So what do you do? The only thing you can do, and it's the best reason to pay with a credit card, I'm always saying it because so many people need to know about it, is chargeback. If you pay for any goods or service with your credit card and you don't get what you paid for, you go to the bank that issued your credit card and you get through to the disputes division and you lodge what is called a chargeback dispute. And essentially what happens is your bank's credit card division then goes to the merchant's bank, in this case whoever was putting on the Enchanted Cirque, and says the service wasn't provided, and obviously you have to prove show your payment or whatever, and you get your money back, and it works very, very well. And the banks know about it. They didn't about 10 years ago. We've been doing some education in consumer protection, and that's the only thing that I can think of that could. I'm just hoping that they paid with a credit card, and they must act fast because there's a limited amount of time that you can.
It's different per bank, I think.
It's different per bank. I must actually do a phone around. The last time I did it was when one of the budget airlines collapsed, and I was doing a lot of information pieces about it. But it varies, if I recall, from 30 days to 90. It's quite a big. So, just found out. It sounds like she'd be well within the 30 days, even if her bank is one of the less generous ones. So, do that.
Act fast, Lamise, if that is the case, because I'm trying to think of the timeline. I know we sent some of our prize winners to go and they did enjoy the show, but that was a month or two ago. It's been quite a while.
So. If she booked it for Christmas, it depends how long ago she booked. But in this case, in terms of proof, you would provide your credit card statement and then any news report stating that this has happened, and I'm sure they have been.
Yeah.
And that's enough proof for them to act on.
Okay. Lamise, I hope that is the case, and please do let us know if you have any joy pursuing it via that avenue. I'm glad you mentioned budget airlines. You've got a question in about airline terms and conditions, which we'll get to after the 1:30 news. We're also talking about putting the wrong kind of fuel in your motor car and what happens after that.
Good.
And who else? What else might be on the menu is entirely up to you listening at home. It's an open line after 1:30. You can call in on absolutely any consumer issue on 021-446-0567. You're also welcome to send an SMS to 31567. Just a reminder, if you've got a really complicated case that Wendy's going to need to investigate and follow up with service providers and do a bit of digging, the best thing to do is send an email directly to her on consumer@nola.co.za, and that is spelt KNOWLER, consumer@nola.co.za. Put the words Cape Talk in the subject line and just a word or two to identify the topic. And we could be talking about your story in one of the coming segments.
You can send us a WhatsApp voice note now on 072-567-1567.
Wendy Nola with me in studio. It's an open line. You can phone in on any consumer issue. And Gavin and Klapmutz will be with you in just a moment. But first, talking airlines. We had a query in from Nicola, who tried to make a booking through Kalula on the website. And essentially something went wrong in the booking process. It took her money, but the booking itself wasn't processed. And when she called for help, she was told to rebook, which she's done successfully. But then she was told the refund of the money from that first booking will only be back in her bank account within 6 to 8 weeks. And she's asking, is that a reasonable turnaround time?
I don't think it's reasonable at all. I had a similar case. I forget the business. Oh, it was Edcon. They also, they didn't deliver an online order. Purchase. Yeah. The woman wanted this product for her fiance's birthday or something, and they promised and didn't arrive, or some game on the day of release, you know, one of those.
Yeah.
And then they said, well, actually, they took 2 months in the end and only refunded her this week when I got involved. But they said in future, we're going to have an emergency refund process for this sort of thing. And I'm thinking, well, I mean, of course, you should have had that all along you've done wrong. And in this case, okay, it was we don't know who was at fault here, whether it was her computer, whether it was the system or whatever. The thing is that she's due a refund. And I think 6 to 8 weeks in 2017 was all the internet
it's just
a policy that shouldn't be there anymore. And I think, well, I'm very happy to send a query on that to the airline concerned. And they're by no means alone in that. That just seems to be.
Yeah.
Sometimes industries have these policies that work for them, that they don't interrogate because no one is putting them on the spot, and it just is what it is. But
it really shouldn't be that.
If you want to know whether something is fair or not, ask yourself if you'd like it to happen to you, and you have your answer very quickly.
Particularly, I mean, you're talking here probably about a substantial sum of money, and at this time of year, flights are expensive.
And
so,
there's no justification for it. I really cannot see how they can. If the process does take that long, then they need to change their process.
Okay. Gavin, sorry, I'm going to ask you to hold a moment longer because I can see we have a caller on the line on the same issue. Peter in Grassy Park has a question around an airline ticket. Peter, good afternoon.
Hi, thanks very much for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, I had an issue about 3 weeks ago. I booked a return flight on SAFAir. The night before I tried to book in, I couldn't book in. About 12 o'clock, I couldn't book in as well. The flight was due at 4:56. At about 4:08, we got to the airport. As we tried to book in, they put the closed sign up, and they told us they closed. So I said, well, I tried to book online. Can you check? She checked, and she said, no, they closed. You've got to go to the service counter. We got to the service counter, and we waited for about 5 minutes. But the woman in front of us, they were issuing my ticket to the woman in front of us. And by that time, there was about 6 to 8 different people would experience the same thing.
Okay, that's unfortunate. So, you're talking about check-in rather than booking.
Yes.
Okay.
So there was an elderly woman, which really upset me, was the treatment towards the elderly woman who'd taken medication because of fear of flying and all these things.
Oh, shame.
And they refused to entertain her, yet they were giving tickets out, our seats away, to somebody who was standing right next to you. It wasn't like that. Close the radio or anything like that.
Okay, I would have to do a full investigation and get SAFAir's side of things. But you will find, I don't have to read them to know, that the check-in, the online check-in is a service they provide. But if you're unable to do that for whatever reason, then the terms and conditions say that you have to get to the check-in counter by a certain time. Mm. I know that recently it changed. I don't know if it was just one airline or all of them, but I know because I tend to cut things quite fast.
I can vouch for that.
That we had half an yes, remember that. It used to be half an hour before, and now it's 45 minutes before that you need to get to
check in,
check-in counter if you haven't checked in yourself. So I'm guessing that they didn't make it to the counter within the required time, and then they became no-shows, and then they went to their standby list.
Okay,
and those tickets.
And
it's,
tickets,
I've been, that's happened to me before ORT, which is awful, but if you go and look at the terms and conditions, there it is. I get that, you know, it could have been handled better and all of that. And if somebody wants to send me an email, I can most certainly get that airline to clarify what the situation is and how often their online booking isn't available and all that sort of thing. But more than that, I can't say right now without doing a full investigation.
So Peter, if you would like Wendy to follow up, just send her an email to consumer@nola.co.za and just put Cape Talk SAFAir. Booking as you
say that,
like that
Pippa,
in the subject
I would say only about 20% of listeners remember to put Cape Talk in the thing.
Please,
for some reason.
Please try and remember.
Difficult.
It does make it so much easier for Wendy if you do that. I've been in that position myself as well, overseas with EasyJet. Anything but EasyJet, as I now call it. I mean, we arrived well in time for a flight, but the queue at the airport was so long that by the time we got, we were only halfway through that queue when that time came and went, and there was nothing we could do about it because there were the terms and conditions in writing as we'd booked.
Anything but glamorous now in travel.
Gavin in Klapmuts, thank you for holding. Good afternoon.
Hi, guys. Thank you for taking my call, Wendy and Pippa.
Hi, Gavin.
Hi. In a nutshell, I bought a bed set 2 years ago. It's been in for repair. I'm putting repair into inverted commas three times.
Oh.
The bed is basically sagging on the one side the whole time. And so after the third time, they exchanged the bed now finally 4 months ago, and now it's starting to do the same, except now the base is also starting to tear on the top part where I actually lay down my head, where there's no pressure. And these guys are just telling me there's nothing wrong with it. They came out for another inspection now. There's nothing wrong with the mattress. I can get the base repaired for a quote of $600 or whatever. And that's where I'm standing now. And these guys, I've been fighting them for almost a year and a half, if not longer.
Okay,
after 2 years.
Let me jump in here, Gavin.
Sure.
You say you bought the bed 2 years ago and it's been in for repair three times. When was the first time that bed went in for repair after you bought it? How long after you bought it?
I think like a year after.
Okay. That makes things a bit more complicated, because by that time, the CPA warranty was over, the 6 months, so you didn't have a right to then demand a refund or an exchange. How long does the bed warranties are normally pretty long, aren't they? Do you know what warranty you got on that bed over and above the implied one?
I think it was a 10-year.
10-year, okay, but it's very, there are a lot of terms and conditions attached to that. So how it works is, and I don't know if many people realize this, my inbox tells me they don't, but when you have a product replaced under warranty, the replacement product doesn't get the full warranty of the original product. It gets the remainder of the original one. The idea being that your money paid for you to have the bed or the product warranted for a certain length of time, and they will give you So basically your second bed has inherited the warranty of the first one. And it's only during the first 6 months of a product's life that you can demand refunds if something goes wrong with it. So now, as far as the government is concerned, this bed is without any warranty altogether. So you're totally at the mercy of the retailer and the manufacturer. They have to do is honor the warranty. Yes, Gavin, sorry.
Sorry to jump in. My wife just sent me a WhatsApp now on the other phone. She said that it's actually, you know, they know more than me.
Of course.
the first call that was within the 6 months.
Oh, was it? That does make...
We'll have to go back into the emails. I mean, I'm just phoning in because I remember this.
Okay. Well, here's what I suggest. If it was repaired within the first 6 months and it failed again within 3 months of that repair, they at that point weren't entitled to repair it again. You had then the right to choose between a refund and a replacement. You did eventually get the replacement, but so this has become quite complicated now. Unfortunately, if you'd known about your rights around the beginning, you could have said, just give me my money back and cut your losses on this bed. But as it stands now, 2 years down the line, you're at the mercy of them and their warranty. So if they're still giving you substandard product, I mean, they're required to keep honoring the warranty. But I think for the sake of both of you, they should reach a point where they say, listen, here's a refund.
Yeah.
Let's call it quits and move on. But that's the best I can tell you, Gavin.
Well, Gavin, what you can do, if you'd like to try, is go to the Cape Talk website after the show and look for this podcast. And you're welcome to take what Wendy has just said and play it for them in defense of your case. Okay. Thanks so much. And I'm really sorry to hear of your long struggles. I hope it doesn't affect your ability to sleep at night. Gavin in Klapmuts, thanks for your call. All right. The calls are streaming in, and Stuart will come to you next. But I did promise I would ask the question about the fuel in the tank.
Oh.
Tyrone emailed and he said a fuel station poured the incorrect fuel into his car, and he says they have accepted full accountability following their own investigations.
Yes.
They've agreed to pay for the repair of the repair of the car, but he's left without a vehicle for a month while that happens. His question is, can I legally insist that they pay for a loan vehicle or rental vehicle?
You know, this is the case that I actually did take up. You must have sent it.
Okay.
Yes. This is the case I was speaking to you off air about.
Yes.
It. So I got involved. It's very unusual, by the way, and commendable for the fuel company to take responsibility.
Yeah.
Often they will fight it and say, you know, your responsibility is to check
the
and
right
blah,
ones
blah,
going
blah.
In.
Or
yeah.
Our records show that, you know, it's fuel contamination. Our records show no water in the tank and blah, blah, blah. In case of this fuel mix up, yes, I did get involved. I'm happy to report. And it was an interesting one in that the insurer, the fuel station's insurer that had got involved, had said, we would have given you a rental car, but the terms and conditions are that you only if you used your car for business purposes. And he, like many of us, used his car to get to work and back, and that was it. So they said, sorry. And so I thought that's offending my sense of fairness. Mm. Terms and conditions are one thing, but how is that? The idea is to not inconvenience him while his car
you
is...
You fix your mistake.
Exactly. Yeah. And the parts are coming from Korea or whatever, and there's a delay. Anyway, I'm happy to report that they agreed. And they are now, as we speak, he's driving around in a rental car that's paid for by the insurer. So
that is fantastic.
Happy to report on that one.
Thanks for the follow-up. Okay. Tyrone's email came in during the course of the week. I'm delighted to hear that there is a response that quickly. Thanks for flagging it, Tyrone. Right. Stuart and Fishhooker, thank you for waiting so patiently. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, ladies. I've got a small question. Maybe I'm sure that you might have heard about it before. A online company called Funky Tights.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I purchased a set of tights for my daughter, Harry Potter tights. They were couriered to my house within, I think it was 6 days of me ordering and paying for the things. Then I ordered a pair of tights, dark roots tights for my wife. And nothing was forthcoming. And I tried emailing them, and I didn't get response on the email. I finally got hold of them on their Facebook Messenger page. And they said they apologized. There was a problem with the tight in customs, and they emailed me back saying there's a problem that were held up in customs and a long runaround story. Would you like a refund, or would you still like the tights? I said, no, I don't mind. I'd like the tights. Because it's for my wife. My wife really likes them, so yes, I would like them. And I waited further, waited longer, and nothing was forthcoming. I contacted them again. The only way possible was on their Facebook Messenger, and to be told that another company has purchased the company, and the new company will be taking over the sale of the tights, or the processing of the orders.
Mm.
And since then...
Nothing.
Nothing. The Funky Tights has ceased to exist on...
Yes.
There's even a Facebook page. I forget the wording, but basically there's a Facebook page angry with Funky Tights or something along those lines.
Okay. Yes, Stuart. I know all about this story. I actually wrote a column about it for The Times. I'm just looking at it now on the 25th of September, saying all of that because many, many people were very fond of this business and had good service.
Mm.
And then suddenly the wheels fell off. I tried to engage with the owner, and I did. She emailed me, and her name was... I just can't find it for the moment. But she did engage with me, and then she stopped engaging with me. And exactly what you've said is everybody else's experience. People have lost thousands, many tens of thousands collectively, and this woman has just disappeared. She came with the excuses about customs and then said the company had been bought. All a lot of nonsense, if you ask me. The upshot is that many, many people, just like Stuart,
are out
of pocket. And it's unfortunate. It's one of the risks of online retailers. You can't go to their door. You can't. I mean, well, I suppose a brick and mortar one could close their doors and do the same thing, and that also happens. But the problem was they just started out okay, and we don't know whether that was their plan all along to get people's trust and then let them down. But the reality is that's what happened.
I mean, I'm smiling because I did a quick Google because I was the minute you said Harry Potter tights, Stuart, I wanted a pair. And I did a quick Google and it got me onto Hello Peter website, and it goes from up until the end of April, one 5-star review after another to suddenly 1-star reviews.
Something
everyone
happened.
Saying the same thing. You can see something changed dramatically.
So again,
what can Stuart do? Chargeback.
I was going to say, you know the answer by now. I think it's probably too long ago now. That's the unfortunate thing, is that people are patient and they get strung along and then they lose their window, their chargeback window.
To get it refunded on their credit card.
To get it refunded through the bank, unfortunately. So I can't, all I can do is commiserate and say that you are in very good and very plentiful company there, Stuart. And it's a sad story. I did try, as I say, to engage with the woman, but I think, there was no intention there.
To ever honor those
game over.
Deals, yeah.
So that is one of the risks, unfortunately. I mean, they had such good product. Obviously, they had a big following. But to be very circumstantial, I say even if you did your homework, you would have ordered because
you would have seen wonderful reviews. Yeah.
So nothing really to say then, just such a shame. And let's hope that woman doesn't pop up somewhere else and do the same thing. That's the big fear.
Stuart, thanks for your call. I'm sorry we can't give you more help than that, but there it is. Right, let's go to Robert in Plumstead. Good afternoon, Robert.
Hi there, ladies. Hope all is well. We bought an appliance from a shop in Claremont, and our main purpose was to have a tumble dryer which could get to a fairly high temperature. There were two machines. It had a dial on the side. One said 70 and one said 80. And I said to the sales lady, who I've dealt with many times before in the past, what's the difference between these machines? And she said, well, they both hold a big load, and this one goes up to 70 degrees, and this one goes up to 80 degrees. I said, awesome. I phoned back a couple of days later, and I was paying an extra 1,000 rand for the machine, which went up to 80 degrees. When we finally got the machine home and used it, we found that the temperature wasn't getting up. And I said to her, what's the problem? It's not getting up to 80 degrees. And we looked through the manual and actually said 80 minutes, not 80 degrees.
She said,
well, I didn't know. And I said, oh, I wish you had told us before we had spent 10,000 rand on a tumble dryer, because the whole point was the
temperature.
The temperature. And she says, well, she denies all knowledge of that conversation. I said, I'll take a lie detector test. But I said, we've used the machine. We need something which will heat up to a high temperature. Now, where do I stand with this?
We go over this so often, and it's always that's clearly a case on your version, and I don't say that to suggest that I disbelieve anything you're saying, Robert, but it's a clear case of mis-selling. I mean, it's actually a beautiful case study that I'm going to use in explaining this concept going forward. But your problem is, as the predictably, that salesperson who stands to get into a lot of trouble has now denied saying that, knowing full well that there's no way you can prove that she said it.
Yeah.
And so my advice is always, when you're told anything that's very material to your purchase by a salesperson, be it a car salesman or an appliance salesman, especially when there's a lot of money involved, get that recorded on the sales documentation so that you have a record of it. The advice is too late for you now, Robert, but to everyone out there listening, you really verbal assurances cannot be proved, and that's the problem. But I would certainly go above her to the management of that company and tell your story, Robert, because, I mean, why would you make that up?
Yeah.
The balance of probabilities is most definitely on your side there. So please do that if you haven't already, and let us know how you go, because mis-selling, I mean, what you really want to know is, yes, they must uplift that and sell it as a second-hand machine somehow through their
network,
and you must be given a refund and opportunity to buy something more suitable. Can I ask one question, technical question, Robert, if you're still there? How did you know it wasn't getting up to 80 degrees?
Well, we actually had they sent around the mechanic. We have an older machine of the same make. We've actually carried on using the older machine.
Okay, I was going to say, unless it had a little thermometer there, how would you know as the consumer?
Actually bought a thermometer.
Okay.
We actually bought a thermometer and stuck it in, and gets up to about 40 degrees.
Goodness.
We specifically wanted we actually wanted 60 degrees, and we thought belt and braces, rather go up to 80.
Pay the extra. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
and the other machine actually did a bigger load, which we actually wanted a bigger load, but the temperatures sold us.
Yeah. If you'd had the proper information, you would have bought something else.
Very interesting case, and I would be most grateful if you did follow that up, and let us know what the outcome is. Please, Robert.
Fantastic.
Okay,
thank you,
Robert. Thanks for your call. Interesting one there, and always happy to be able to provide you with good case studies today for you.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, lovely to get an SMS from Janet in Philadelphia, who's also found herself on the end of the wrong fuel in the car issue, but this one's got a happy ending. Janet says, "I had diesel instead of unleaded 95 put into my car. The garage paid for the car to be towed. It took a few hours for their mechanic to drain the fuel and replace, check, and the vehicle was in the same running order order the same day. This was at the Swartland one stop on the N7. Their management is excellent and their mechanic on call was very efficient.
I love that.
Fantastic.
So
yeah.
It happens, but I suppose my view of these cases is skewed by the fact that I only hear mostly
the ones that go wrong.
Yes,
yeah.
But I can tell you many do go wrong, and I'm glad you read the name of that service station, because that treatment will give you an indication of how they treat consumers in all other areas
exactly.
of their business as
yeah.
well. So,
yeah. So thank you for that, Janet.
To be commended, yes.
And I've just got an email from Tyrone who's listening saying, I really want to thank you for empowering us consumers by sharing your insights and knowledge. You guys rock. Tyrone, thanks for the
Tyrone.
Feedback. And I'm so glad that things have been resolved for you. Right. Andrew has been waiting very patiently from Observatory talking about cell phone contracts. Andrew, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Yes. Quickly, In May, I got one of the providers phoned me and said, look, you're due for a cell phone upgrade. And I said, no, it can't be true. I've just upgraded mine and renewed my contract. And then I went and looked at it subsequently turned out that I was being billed for another phone as well as my own phone. So I went to Vodacom and checked it out. And they said, well, this isn't your phone. I said, no, it's not. This is my phone. I've only got one phone. And it turned out for 2 years, since January 2015, I had been paying for another phone, and it was a case of fraud, you know. And I that was in May this year. I went and obviously, you know, tried to sort it out with them. And I've had a long run around with their forensic investigators, their subscriber collectors, their fraud division. I've had to, you know, do an affidavit with the police and things like that. And since then, I've heard nothing from them. I've phoned, you know, like regularly, like every fortnight or so, and said, like, you know, like, you owe me quite a lot of money. When are you going to give it to me? And they're very friendly, and they say, well, like, you know, thank you for calling. Will you like to rate our service and all this kind of stuff?
Show me the money.
No sign of the money. And I had long since suspected that my bills were very, very high. You know, I'm a journalist, and that I do a lot of calls. But, you know, they've even gone so far as to tell me that they've seen the person who took out this contract in my name in Springs, and he was, you know, bald, and he was short, and looks nothing like me, and you know, all this kind of stuff. And you know, if it's a case of, like, if I phone them again, I'm going to get the same thing again. Is they're going to be very polite, and they're going to just say, well, you know, it's gone to these people. I'll phone you on Friday and tell you what they said. And they do. They phone back and say they said this, but it doesn't go any further than that.
Okay. Well, we can do something about that, Andrew.
Yeah. Another thing is that, like, the payments are still coming off. I'm still paying.
No, that's ridiculous.
No.
You sound far too patient.
And calm about
and
it.
And calm. How much money do you reckon you need to be refunded?
It's close on 25,000.
Oh, no. That explains why they're being nice but ineffective.
Yeah.
I'd love this case, Andrew. Please email me.
Okay, Andrew, please drop an email to consumer@nola.co.za and put in the subject line Cape Talk cell phone. Two phones,
yes.
And Wendy will know to look out for it.
I will, and not just because you're a not short, not bald journalist.
That is a shocker to end the show on. Quite a few questions coming in about ticketing and booking and Viagogo and booking for shows over the festive season. I'm going to pass those on to Wendy, and maybe it's something you could take a look at in the weeks to come.
Or we could do a general blog post if it's not covered by what we've done today
okay.
to help people out here.
Okay. Wendy, always lovely to have you with us. Thanks
great.
For popping
Thanks
into
for
there.
Her.
Remember, the address to send your questions is consumer@nola.co.za. Please try and remember to put the words Cape Talk in the subject line with just one or two descriptors to help Wendy categorize it if you like.